Hi, thank you very much. I'm Bernard Harm from D-Cakes, and today's talk is to provide you some insights about the recent integration of EVPN and the activation of proxy agent functionality on our platform. While I won't recap in general on EVPN functionality, I will provide some details about the challenges that we see as an IXP network, as well as details about the migration that we did. And finally, talk about the results, what shifted, what happened in our network after we activated those functionalities. So, talking about why it was so necessary to do this. While we're eager to celebrate another new peak each and every week out there, the downside of having a lot of peers in our larger IXP networks like New York, Madrid, or of course Frankfurt is that we see an increasing amount of broadcast, unknown unicast, and multicast traffic in our network. And the truth is that every packet of this noise is knocking on the interfaces of your routers and wants to be evaluated, and by that causes some serious CPU load. And we have seen already in the past that for smaller boxes, it was impossible to work properly being connected to our Frankfurt network. And this simply is not acceptable. We needed to do something about that, because the situation might get even worse in the future as we might connect even more and more participants to our network. A second major motivation for us to do something about that was the constant threat of proxy hour, proxy neighbor discovery. So if due to misconfiguration, a participant of the IXP network decides to answer to address resolution requests that are not for him, there is nothing that you can really do than taking the phone, reach out to the customer and request him to immediately change his configuration. And if this doesn't work, then to shut or disconnect the customer finally from the fabric in order to make sure that you save all of the other customers. So EVPN with a proxy agent functionality was a very good way to find a solution to that, but we'll get into the details on how that works later on. What I also want to show you today is some issues that we saw on the platform when it comes to certain traffic patterns or flow patterns. And for that, it's important to understand how port security works at D-Cakes. What you can see here is that on the ingress side of all of our customer interfaces, we do a classification of the traffic into broadcast, unknown unicast, and multicast traffic, and rate limit all of those to 1 Mbps each. And on top of that, then the regular unicast traffic is applied. If you take a look at the egress side of the network, then we do a general BUM rate limiting to 5 Mbps, and then on top of that, the regular customer traffic is applied. So it's important to keep in mind that even if a customer fully makes use of all of his ingress use, he can't produce an overload egress-wise because there is still some headroom of 2 Mbps. So address resolution or other mechanisms should still work. On top of that, yes, we of course do static MAC entries, and we have egress and ingress MAC filters on all of our ports. So the first problem that I want to dig deeper into is the problem of long-lasting flows, which is not specifically to IXPs or VPLS-based networks like we have. This can also happen to any switch-based network where you have multiple nodes on the way. So let's assume we have a customer sending a traffic flow to another customer over the infrastructure, and he does this for a very long time. And what can happen is that on an intermediate node, the MAC just ages out and gets dropped of the FIP or FDB or however you call that. And by that, the traffic then gets classified as unknown unicast, which would mean in the D-Cakes infrastructure that it gets rate limited to 5 Mbps ingressly and just flooded locally. So effectively, the communication is interrupted. So what you're going to do about this? Easy answer. You start to increase your MAC aging timers. But if you do this, you run into another problem of long-lasting max that I want to show here. So let's see, when we have multiple customers sending traffic flows to another customer that is connected in another part of the network, another VPLS instance or another router, for example, and immediately this customer gets disconnected, then what happens is that the MAC of this customer gets withdrawn from the local FIP, but this information is not shared with the other VPLS instances or routers within the network in classic flood and learn. So what happens is that the incoming traffic gets then classified as being unknown unicast. It gets flooded locally. It gets egress-wise rate limited, but not really, because our egress MAC filters make sure that the customers only get the traffic that is destined to their MAC addresses. But the important point to see here is that if this is a very large customer, so let's assume the incoming traffic flows could be multiple of hundreds of gigabits that come in and that now get immediately recognized as being unknown unicast. And by that, they put a very large pressure on the internals of your gear, on the chipsets and the switch fabric and everything that is involved on the path. And we have seen issues with that already in the past. And we needed to come up with some mitigation strategies in here that worked so far. But if we take a look on how this changes, if we introduce EVPN in our infrastructure, then we see that the unknown unicast classification pattern just inverses, because now the information is shared with all of the other parts of the network that this MAC has been withdrawn, the customer is disconnected, and all of the local nodes or the sourcing nodes already start to classify the traffic as being unknown unicast. If this really impacts how much unknown unicast we see in our infrastructure, we will see later on when we take a deeper look into the traffic patterns and what finally changed after the migration. Another type of incident that I want to share with you today is the scenario of VLAN loops. And it might sound synthetical, but we have seen this in the last year. That's why I also pasted a screenshot of an announcement that we did last year here. So let's see how that one works. Let's assume we have a customer that is connected with two routers to the IXP infrastructure with two dedicated connections, a lot of customers do due to redundancy. Now let's see what happens if this customer, for whatever reason, decides to put a switch on his side and by that shortcuts the two interfaces that he has to the IXP fabric. There are several steps now happening. The first thing is that the two routers continuously inject bump traffic into the IXP network, which of course they do. They still send ARP requests or neighbor discovery requests. And what then happens is that this bump traffic starts to circulate between the IXP network and the customer's network. If the customer does not apply any additional security mechanisms on the switching equipment on his side. And this is a very slow process because the amount of broadcast and multicast traffic just increases slowly as he injects another request, and this starts to loop, and finally we hit the magic egress rate limit that we were talking about, because we already have a lot of noise in our network, and then the additional traffic from these two connections kicks in to avoid a proper address resolution in the network. So yes, having the ability to simply stop broadcasting the broadcast traffic and the multicast traffic is a good way to mitigate this kind of scenario. So let's dig into how this ARP and neighbor discovery agent functionality works that we have just implemented. It's on top of the basic EVPN functionality, and While I think the how a proxy agent works in general is quite clear. It starts to reply on the behalf of other customers to send out answers to address resolution requests. But on top of this, we implemented some functionality that is stated in RFC 9161, which gives us the possibility to configure static IP to MAC bindings on our nodes, and by that to control the behavior, to not have any sort of dynamic learning, but just to have static entries in the router's database to make sure we can control what the router is answering to all of the customers. This RFC also states a lot of other functionality that is relevant to IXPs, like, for example, having two MACs being mapped to a single IP, which we might introduce hopefully throughout the next year in order to support, your demands when it comes to the exchange of routers equipment, and you want to have two MACs that are being able to be resolved to a single IP. Or even, duplicate address detection scenarios when a customer configures an IP that is not belonging to him to have the ability to mitigate in scenarios like that. Now, let's talk about the migration that we just did and how this worked out for us. While we were planning the overall migration procedure for our global network, we were considering three major goals that we wanted to achieve by defining the procedure. The first goal was we just wanted to do small steps. We wanted to reduce the risk of having a too large change at once, and by that, just seeing our infrastructure burn because something goes wrong. We wanted to reduce complexity. We wanted to avoid scenarios like where we needed to make non-EVPN-based configurations work with EVPN-based configurations, and we wanted to avoid that our operations teams would have a hard time throughout the migration period because of an increasing complexity of how our network works. The third goal was we wanted to clearly reduce downtimes to make sure that our customers do not suffer too much from the migration that we do, and yet to do this in the most easy way, as well for you, as well for us. So we took a look at different scenarios. For example, if we would have gone with router-by-router migration, this of course, would have counted into the goal of having small steps, quite small steps, but it would have increased complexity in a ridiculous way, as well as bringing in a lot of downtimes. We finally decided to go service by service. As I've already mentioned, our MPLS-based networks is providing VPLS services, and we decided to go with the migration of whole VPLS environments. So if we talk about the migration of Frankfurt, as we do provide remote peering, the peering services are not only available in Frankfurt, they're also available in Hamburg or in Munich or in Düsseldorf. So that means that we change the configuration on a whole bunch of routers, on a whole part of our network. This clearly reduces downtime because this basically means that you only get one maintenance announcement for the switchover or the activation of the new functionalities in our network. But it doesn't really count into the small steps that we wanted to do because, in fact, it's larger steps. So we really, really needed to make sure that whatever we do there just needed to work. It wasn't feasible to fail on that migration. So we put a very, very huge amount of our efforts to prepare this migration and to do a proper testing. And of course, we also had the challenge of identifying a representative part of our network that we put into a testing environment, because just rebuilding the global network, there is no business case behind that. And We, for that, created a virtual lab environment in the Azure cloud, some Ansible playbooks behind that in order to spawn and withdraw and do a certain set of tests that we run through once we changed the configuration or something changed in the procedure that we planned to do this. And while there are very good solutions now on the way, like Container Lab or KNE that you might have already heard about, we already started the work while these solutions were already out there. And had to do all of this on our own. But I think every hour invested here was worth it, because once you have done this ramp up work, then it helps you a lot in order to make sure you can do integration tests in the future too. As EVPN and this proxy agent stuff was mainly a control plane feature, we had a very good test coverage, but of course we were not able to test everything or see everything. Like, for example, the large traffic patterns that we see in our network out there, or the behavior of the diverse customer equipment that are connected to our infrastructure, and to test all of that. But we will see what happened later on. Also important to mention is that we invested huge efforts in the configuration tool chain, which is behind that. Because before we did the migration, a lot of our configurations were still done manually to some extent. But we decided, no, we can't do this anymore. Yeah, we need to template all of our configurations. We need to define a source of truths. We need to make sure that the configuration is in a defined state overall globally. And that meant we had to do a lot of cleanup works. And what you can see here is a landscape of the systems that are involved in the configuration creation at DKIX, and all of these systems needed to be synchronized and needed to be able to support the migration procedure. And this also took a lot of the efforts to get there and to really make sure that every line of code was created in the way that we expected it. So, and after everything was prepared, you just need to turn over the switch and turn on the functionality. And what you can see here basically is a graph from the traffic levels that we measure on a dedicated port on our Frankfurt infrastructure. And what you can see here is that we needed to unconfigured this port before the migration began and needed to reconfigure it after the migration was done. That's why there is a gap. But what we clearly can see is that the amount of bump traffic already decreased, and what happened is at the exact point of the migration is before the migration we copied all of the configurations that we wanted to apply to the routers locally on the routers. Of course, you do some syntax checks and then you check if everything is fine with the configurations that you want to apply. And then with cluster shell or whatever you like, we committed the configuration all at once to immediately apply the new configurations and just expect the downtime of the convergence of the EVPN to happen. It sounds strange, but we try to avoid issues due to remote connectivity to the routers, broken pipes, broken SSH sessions, or things like that. So we just copied everything beforehand, which for the largest router at Frankfurt meant configuration change of 11,000 lines of code, and then immediately applied it. And it took roughly 6 seconds to get this configuration applied. And while we were checking ourselves if the network is still in a healthy state, it looks like we didn't even lose a single ping while the reconfiguration took place and the EVPN kicked in and converged. That was a pretty nice experience because it simply worked, and all of the efforts that we put into the migration preparation were worth it because it was a quite smooth migration and it just worked as expected. But let me later show you what didn't work as expected, because every time there is something that didn't work as expected. So talking about the results, what did we see changing after we introduced EVPN and we activated the proxy agent functionality? So what we can see here is the change in the packets per second that we measured in our Frankfurt platform. So we see a very, very huge decrease in IPv4 and IPv6 bump traffic that happened after the activation. And also the decrease rates per frame type involved heavily decreased. There was just a few multicasts before the migration on the platform, and there was even less after the migration. But on the unicast, multicast, as well for IPv4 and for IPv6, everything decreased. So the new functionality really kicked in on all of these of the frame types involved. If we take a look at the distribution of IPv4 and IPv6, of the overall bump traffic, we can see that there is a larger amount of IPv4 before the migration than after the migration. So the features that we enabled are better in mitigating the bump flooding for IPv4 than IPv6. And if we take a look at the distribution of broadcast and unicast and multicast in IPv4 before the migration and after the migration, then we can see that after the migration, the amount of unknown unicast even dropped. Of course, because of that, broadcast got a little bit higher. I think overall, the total amount of packets just went down, what we have seen on the slides before that. But within the bump distribution, we can see that the amount of unknown unicast also dropped. And if we take a look at the IPv6 traffic pattern, we can see, IPv6 mainly was multicast driven before the migration and still is after the migration. So the traffic distribution here almost stays the same. So, what didn't work? What went wrong on our way? While enabling EVPN, we moved over from TLDP-based tunnels to autobahn tunnels via EVPN, and by that, we lost the possibility of having hash labels in our MPLS for traffic distribution on our LACs. And we needed to enable entropy labels, additional entropy labels in our label stack to make sure that the traffic gets spread equally over the LACs that we have in Frankfurt. And the usage of these entropy labels did not work on any box involved in our network. That's why we experienced some high load on some of the links in our Frankfurt network, while some interconnects were just very low loaded. And we finally found out that the reason for this has to do with the entropy labels that are not being interpreted correctly on some of the boxes that we have. We have a case with our render open to that. Is there something that we can do about this? Yes. We were able to add another type of hashing mechanism on the LACs that are affected to make sure that the boxes start to equally share the load on each of those LACs members so that we have a fix or a workaround at least until we have an answer to that problem. Another thing that we experienced, unfortunately, was that our IPv6 neighbor discovery agent is replying to requests with the wrong source IP or even with a nulled source IP address, which under certain circumstances with certain router models and certain software release leads to a non-functioning address resolution for a few of our customers. So after we got some of the complaints, we decided to shut down the feature. So the IPv6 neighbor discovery agent is currently not active anymore, and we will have to do a software upgrade to get that one fixed and to have this functionality back in our network again. Okay, so that's basically all of it. Feedback.
Thank you, Bernhard. We have time for some questions. So are there any questions? Run, audio angel, run.
There's two questions for me. One is which platform you use for automation, because you said in 6 seconds applied everything. And the second question is for the last parts, because you said that IPv6 neighbor discovery is not working, and the solution was software upgrade, and you have done all your migration in about 25 minutes. It's in the same time or later?
No, fortunately not. So the question about the automation, we do have some internal self-developed tools in order to create configurations out of systems like NetBox that you might have seen on the slides. The way that we applied those configurations was that we just copied the new configuration as a file locally to the devices, and then committed those configurations in order to make sure that the full configuration is applied and no effects kick in while we apply the configurations remotely. So there is no true automation solution on how we apply configurations onto our network devices for that migration. The second question about the required software updates that we need to do is, we need to do classic firmware upgrades on our routers, which is a multi-hour procedure per box overall. And as we need to do this globally, it will take us some time.
It's not exactly in the same 25 minutes. So it wasn't applied in the same 25 minutes, this means? Means you did this stuff later in...
We still need to do this software upgrade.
Okay, the internet has questions. What could be or what are the reasons for the unknown unicast traffic?
Well, unknown unicast happens if traffic gets locally flooded because there is no known MAC to IP binding. Available. So whenever, I just showed the example in throughout the slides, whenever a participant of the peering network disconnects, for example, and the MAC to IP binding gets withdrawn from the local FIP tables, then immediately all of the traffic that is still injected in the platform and destined to this customer's MAC address gets recognized as unknown unicast and locally flooded on all of the nodes. That's the major reason for unknown unicast.
Okay, and the second one, by checking so many packets, so many times a packet, what SLA to deliver a packet do you guarantee over your infrastructure? 1 millisecond should be an upper limit?
I'm pretty sure that there are some SLA documents out there that we have to make sure which times we agree to our customers in order to push packets through our network. And we did not expect that the overall forwarding procedure takes pretty much longer, as so far we haven't seen any increase in latency times on our internal measurement tools due to the activation of that feature. In fact, we were also monitoring the CPU load of our internal boxes because we didn't know, hey, activating a new feature in such an environment, what will be the impact on the local CPU load, and we didn't see a really large increase, maybe 1 to 5 more percent of CPU load when it peaks. But so far we did not experience any higher latency to pass packets through the network.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Then thank you very much. A warm applause for Bernhard.